Roll one, shot one.
Lefty.
Say again?
Lefty.
Do what
Lefty.
Again? Lefty.
Sweet. Larry Lefty, shot one, take one.
Lefty.
Larry, the first question I want to ask you about concerns the Walter Cronkite special. And you mentioned that it was unusual for an anchorman to be away when we talked about it. You said something about Walter's new sense of involvement, changing his own mind about the problem. Could you say something about the Walter Cronkite special?
Well, at first, I suppose it's important to talk about it sort of in context. If you look at the whole coverage of the war, which is virtually 12 or 14 years, but the important American involvement over a period of 10 years from 65 to 75, or 65 to 73, if you prefer, Cronkite, a number of different times, did things that are unusual for an anchorman to do, and he wasn't the only one. Others did too. But for example, as early as the fall of 1965, Cronkite had gone to Vietnam to make a documentary and to see for himself. He had from time to time gotten up from behind his anchor position desk and used, for example, in the fall of 65, a map to show the area of fighting in the Drang Valley. In the fall of 67, he did the same thing with a relief map showing where the positions were in the fighting and so forth. Cronkite was all through the history of American television journalism, of course, involved in the big stories, the important stories. All of the conventions, except one when the ratings were low and he was fired and replaced him, but he was back very quickly. All the election nights, all of the space shots, more recently in the coverage of the Mideast peace talks and so forth. So Walter Cronkite has been a part of every important American television event that people have witnessed. So when he decided in early 1968, after the beginning of the Tet fighting, to go to Vietnam, it was an unusual decision. It was an important decision for him journalistically and for CBS. I think he had been encouraged for some time by a number of people from the bureau there to come out and take a look for himself. I don't know that he changed his mind. I think if you look at the program carefully, he gives a very careful, measured response describing what he finally ends up by describing as a stalemate. I don't know that he changed his mind, but he certainly came to alter his opinion, as did a lot of other Americans at the same time. I think the important thing is that Walter Cronkite would very much stand at the center of American journalism, at the center of American public opinion. So the change, and I think it was a slight change, but the change of opinion that was taking place was very representative of what was going on in the country as a whole.
And I think without slighting, we can go on to the next related question, which was, what was the effect of the documentary on the public and on the president?
Well, it's always difficult to describe the effect of any single communications act on any kind of behavior. I mean, as you know, that's something that mass communications researchers and others worry about constantly. It's very difficult to establish a simple cause and effect relationship. However, it is clear that because of what we talked about, because of Cronkite's importance in American journalism, it's undeniable that this was one of a number of different communications events that probably were important to public opinion and specifically to the judgment that Lyndon Johnson made not to seek re-election. At least, Johnson told a number of people, Bill Moyer specifically, but others. Johnson specifically said that the Cronkite program was one of the most important of a number of other things that affected his decision not to run.
Without slating, we might just stress, you said before that Tet was a time for reassessment. Generally, what was the impact of television as far as public opinion's reassessment of our involvement?
It's really not hard to know, but I think it had to be, it had to be very important. It was something we hadn't seen before. First, the war on television was unusual in itself, beginning in 1965. But for the most part, that was a war of troops in the field and so forth. With rare exceptions, it was a close-up view of the war, but a close-up view always of a small part of the war. But suddenly, the last day of January 1968, and then the first few days of February, fighting in cities, fighting the city of Saigon, just a few blocks from the bureaus and so forth, house-to-house fighting. Suddenly, it seemed to have changed from that little far-off jungle war to something, World War II, fighting right in cities. And I think that television audiences, I think people watching on television, probably relate better or understand more or have more feelings about fighting in cities. Suddenly, again and again and again, we were seeing fleeing refugees, fleeing in the cities. I think that had an important impact, taken with everything else, on public opinion.
Did television lead or follow public opinion?
It's very hard to know. Again, it's the same problem, and there's just no way anybody who has a definitive answer for that doesn't know what he's talking about. But I think that, you know, I would conclude that television did tend to follow public opinion. If you look, for example, at a number of the public opinion questions, the Gallup question, for example, do you approve or disapprove of the way the president is handling the war? If you look at that, you tend to look at a curve that falls gradually but rapidly, falls off as public opinion waned for the war. But at the same time, there are always more spokesmen for the war appearing on television than there was public opinion for war. That is to say, television is a presentational medium. Television doesn't say anything or do anything. It isn't anything. It is a presentational medium. It's a transmitter. And it always transmitted more pro-administration, more pro-war people, than it did those who were opposing it. It didn't transmit them equally. I mean, the administration was appearing on Meet the Press and Face the Nation and so forth. Demonstrators were appearing in the streets. It's hard to measure those different kinds of presentations of opinion.
Good. Thank you. Terrific. Good stuff.
Did that work?
Sweet.
Flag.
Shot two, take one, George Bailey.
Stand by, David. Go.
George, when the television coverage of General Loan's execution at Tet, you say that this was a turning point, creating public opposition to the war, and if so, why?
That's overstating the case. The film and the still picture came at a turning point in the war, but there were clearly all kinds of other things that turned the war and other kinds of news stories and all the rest. But of all the coverage of the Tet Offensive, both I think in picture, in motion pictures and in newspapers, that one shot, that one scene came to sum up and symbolize and stand for, or was sort of a shorthand for the Tet Offensive. So it came at a turning point. Different people probably attached different meanings to it, you know, as far as public opinion. Different individuals saw it in different ways. Some people simply saw it as violence on television, regardless of the war. But other people obviously saw it as meaning that we had lost control, that it was just chaos in Saigon, and they were shooting people on the street, you know, just almost randomly. And other people saw it as an indictment of the South Vietnamese, particularly someone who was supposed to be the chief of police. You know, is this the way we expect a chief of police to behave?
Oh, a lot of the impact of that film and the photo probably came from the replication of it. You can say something about the way it was used.
Sure. Yeah, the photo itself, the Eddie Adams Associated Press still picture, was clearly one of the most reproduced photographs in history. There's just no way to count up how many times it's been reproduced and reproduced and reproduced in books and magazines and newspapers all over the world. I mean, it would be impossible, I'd suggest, to find somebody who doesn't recognize it, you know, who hasn't seen it almost anywhere in the world. So it's clearly, if a photo is going to have impact, it has to be related to who sees it, and virtually everybody saw that. The film itself, the television film, which was separate, was shown really only two or three times on the networks, and they used clips of it in a couple of movies. But whether or not there was the motion film or the still picture is a fine point, really. I mean, it was the same stark, dramatic event seen by virtually everybody in the world so that they could attach meaning to it or debate about it.
Okay, thank you.
I would like to catch a couple of cutaways.
Now we're just talking about anything. I think that WLS Music Radio is about the most...
No, we can use... See, use you. So if you will say something about the use of the poster, the photograph for anti-war posters.
Sure.
We'll pay you off the end of the interview.
Okay. The photograph has been picked up not only by newspapers trying to just, you know, repeat the showing of the event, but it's been picked up by various political groups and used for their own political purposes. And I think the most interesting example I saw was a poster that the Vietnam Veterans Against the War distributed that was, I think it's called a line print, but it looks sort of like a silhouette, just sort of a black cutout outline really an abstraction of the original photograph, almost merely suggestive. And they, of course, thought that that demonstrated something about why we should stop the war. But what I found interesting was that the they thought that you didn't need to even show the picture, that it was so familiar and so popular and all over the place that all you needed was to give this vague outline and we'd all instantly know what it is. We'd just, you know, we'd flash and we'd recognize it, you know, very stark. How's the Negra? Okay. Is that it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Terrific.
Excellent.
No, that's
sure.
Very good. Excellent. Really.